Saturday, January 12th, 2013. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KOSP Public Radio. Today on Geek Speak, geek news. Yeah, the whole hour long. It's time now for Geek Speak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Trock, so please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Ben Jaffe. He's a web instructor and world traveler. Hey, Ben.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Good,
actually.
It's good to see you.
Good
and
to
also
see you.
Lindsay Lonnie, systems analyst, support engineer, software engineer. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
It's been a while. It's good to see you.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be back.
So we'll just jump right into it. You were telling me something kind of cool about Amazon and what they're doing. And
yeah.
Amazing. Go ahead.
I like this too because I'm really into music. So if you've purchased a CD from Amazon since 1998, you can go there now and they have an app that will allow you to get the MP3 version of that CD.
And like download it?
Yeah, you can download it. And it's 256-bit, so it's good quality and everything. Yeah, it's exciting.
Wait, so they're just offering redundancy of the file of the CD you already bought?
Yeah, exactly.
That's fantastic.
Since
you say an
1998?
App. Yeah, I don't think you bought stuff before that on Amazon, but no, you would have
internet,
bought books.
Did the internet exist? In, I don't know.
You weren't alive, right?
I wasn't alive.
So, okay, so this plan is kind of amazing. I'm surprised that they're doing it. Amazon's been selling CDs and music for a long time, I guess since 1998. I didn't know the date. And this app you're talking about, is it a phone app or an application on your computer? I mean, downloading for your phone is not necessarily the best way to deal with it. Is that, how does it run?
It's called AutoRip, and it's something you can go to their website. I haven't tried it myself yet. I just found out about this, but I'm definitely going to try it.
Yeah.
And so I'll let you know, but it's just an app on their site. So they have like Cloud Player and things like that. And I don't think it's something you would do from your phone. You'd
no.
do it from your computer.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So if you've got an Amazon account, you've probably bought a CD. And if you bought a CD, you can get a high-quality MP3 without having to, what we call, rip it. And that's the reason it's called auto-rip.
Mm-hmm.
That's the term we geeks have used for years to take a CD and turn it into music on your computer. You're ripping the stuff off of the CD. But in any case, auto-rip from Amazon, any CDs you bought for them, you can get a high-quality MP3 and download it. Kind of cool. I'm surprised that they're doing it.
Like, yeah, me too.
But then again, they do some really cool things. You know, if you've got a Prime account, you get to watch movies for free.
You know, the thing that we've got Google, we've got Facebook, we've got Apple, we've got all these huge companies that everyone's worried about privacy, taking over the world, whatever. The thing that disturbs me about Amazon is I tend to generally like them.
Right.
So you know there's something wrong there.
I don't want to like a behemoth company. They have their fingers in everything. They're huge.
Absolutely.
They keep allowing my life with music to be easier. So I've got Pandora on my phone, and so I listen to that in the car, and then I hear new music because it integrates new music.
Sure.
And then I click on, you know, I want to buy this song, and it just puts me right to the Amazon site. I have an Amazon account, and it just lets me click buy once, and it downloads it not only to my phone, but to my computer and my Amazon cloud account.
Now, Ben, when
easy.
She was saying that, even though you like Amazon generally, I saw your spine tense.
Yeah.
I did see that. You inhaled and went, evil qualities emerge.
I know. It's too easy. It can't be that easy.
Yeah.
It can't
Lindsay,
be that easy.
Thank you for
evil.
The story about auto rip. Everyone's got to try that out, see how it works out, and we'll know more about it next week, of
well,
course.
Everybody who's bought an Amazon CD.
Yeah, that's what I said. Everybody.
Everybody.
I actually haven't. I've bought a lot of things from Amazon.
Well,
but
you
I've
do
never
a lot of online music, right?
I tend to buy MP3s.
Yeah, yeah. And you use Spotify rather than.
I use Spotify. The other the thing that disturbs me about Spotify is that not only do I like them, but also the artists get a really, really small percentage.
Well, that's true everywhere, isn't it?
No, I mean like really small. Like if you self-produce an album, the number of albums... Oh, you know what? I don't have the statistics
okay.
in front
you
of me.
You can report it next
well,
time.
Yeah. It was something like you need several million monthly views to make enough to live. with minimum wage.
I don't like Spotify just because I like the functionality and the ideas, and I like people sharing their playlists with me because I learn about new music. But I just signed up more recently, and I guess before they were their own entity. Now you can't sign up unless you give them your Facebook account, and that always kind of weirds me out because I don't always trust Facebook. And if it's tied in, you can turn off the thing where it updates everybody about your activity on Spotify. But it doesn't have that on by default. So if people don't know about that, immediately when they start listening to music, it's alerting everybody else on their Facebook list what they're listening to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty weird to think about using Facebook as your key to a bunch of services on the internet. That weirds me out.
And it's happening all over the place, right?
Yeah.
It's actually, I've got a little bit of a little plug-in. What's the... Ghostery, I think, is one of those ones that does filtering. I think Al's recommended it before. This general idea is that your browser is communicating all the time to websites, and there's a lot going on, and you don't always know what's going on. And so Ghostery is this great little add-in plugin that basically shows you what's happening the entire time.
There's another one for Chrome that I use called Collusion.
Yes, that's the one I was going to talk about. That's
really?
Awesome. Yeah, yeah.
No way.
That's from Disconnect Me, and actually that's the thing I've got in front of me right now.
That's the company.
The company is called Disconnect Me, and the team, the guy that the co-founder, this is a little bio up there. Brian is the original developer of Disconnect. He spent many years tracking users as an engineer for DoubleClick and then Google. But now, like George in episode 86 of Seinfeld, is doing the complete opposite. So basically, the issue is that if you see these like buttons and these like buttons all over the place, but also Google Plus buttons and other things, tweet, whatever. And every time you do that, that image is actually served from a different site. And so to get that image onto your page and to get the information about like what friends of yours are liked, Facebook or Twitter, whatever the button is from, gets information about you and shows and knows who you are and therefore delivers back some content that's related. Additionally,
and that's no matter where you are on the internet. If there's a Facebook like button or a Twitter tweet button or
they know where you are, right?
Plus one button,
There's some that are invisible. Sometimes the buttons don't even see. There's a great service by Google called Analytics, and that allows people to keep records of where people click and deal with stuff on the internet very easily. But to do that, they actually send the content of what a person's doing to Google. So Google knows a lot of information. This is one of the things they do. So these services like Ghostify or Chrome, what's the Chrome one called?
It's Collusion.
Collusion. And the thing is, they've got Collusion for Safari as well as for Chrome. And they basically visualize in a really kind of cool interface how many different websites are being communicated with for every visit. So I highly recommend it. Additionally, Disconnect has this great Get Facebook Disconnect, Get Google Disconnect, these little plugins, which basically stop this automatically from happening. Keep you logged in from your account, but make your browser not always send that information if you're on a separate site. So if you go to Facebook, you're still logged in, but if you go to geekspeak.org, the like button doesn't have information about you in it. I kind of like that idea.
Yeah,
I definitely agree on that.
All right, let's go on with the next story. Ben, it's your turn. Well, first off, Ben, you do space stuff, so I hope that you saw the largest thing ever in the universe kind of thing.
Yes.
What is going on?
I
know you weren't prepped to talk about this.
I totally wasn't prepped to talk about this. You actually sent me the link.
The largest structure in the universe found, and it's mind-boggling. And just let me say that the thing that was great about it is the solar system, our solar system, is 100,000 light years wide. Okay, that's the Milky Way galaxy. Massive, right? It's everything we could possibly imagine ever knowing about, really, right? 100,000 light years.
Kind of.
This thing is... Oh, now I've lost the value. Oh, quasars, the biggest quasars I've ever seen, 600 million light years wide. So those are big too, right?
These are quasar clusters, right?
Quasar clusters. They're really big structures.
Quasars aren't actually...
600 million light years wide. Massively larger than 100,000, right? Just orders of magnitude. This thing looks like it's 4 billion light years across.
At its widest point, yeah.
And it's so large, in fact, that it makes us rethink what we know about cosmology. So I'm really... really interested to find out what happens more about this, whether it's just like a blip on a radar screen is totally wrong, but we'll go into that later. I'm assuming you have a little bit of space news, though.
Well, it is another note on that. It's interesting. When I read that, the part of my brain, the common sense part, was like, if it's that big, how did we miss it? Like, it's
the universe is bigger.
Really far away, right?
You know, before you get into your next story, because you're about to, we've got to do this.
Everybody in Washington is arguing about the trillion-dollar coin.
Ben, I hate to do this to you, but
no,
I
no, no, no. You look like you have something on your mind.
Yeah, I do. So I'm just taking a look at Twitter. Unfortunately, I've got my iPad next to me. And I just saw this post on Twitter from Steve, who's the webmaster at KOSP. It's actually at KOSP is the Twitter handle. And it says, "Hey, Lyle and KOSP geeks, Z Frank is in Santa Cruz Mall this weekend. See you there." And I'm surprised. I'm assuming he's performing. You guys know who Z Frank is?
No.
Oh, my God, no. Oh, no. He's like one of my internet heroes. And I'm actually going to leave right now. You guys do the rest of the show. No. Okay. Z Frank is like an online artist. He's been working for years. The thing that he got really popular for is how to dance properly. It was like this animated GIF before movies were going on, right? So most of the animated GIFs we were dealing with as web developers were kind of like silly chickens rotating and stuff. You know, nothing really... Yeah.
Spinning skulls.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Spinning skulls. The worker construction icon.
And the flaming text.
Yes, yes.
So I saw someone made a blog post about how no one in the 90s, for some reason, combined the spinning skull with the fire. The spinning skull
did.
On fire.
Apparently, okay. So the first time I saw Z Frank was with these early days of the internet, maybe in 98 when I was buying my first CDs. I don't know, maybe earlier than that. And he had this great dance video that was just a whole bunch of how to dance properly. And I've actually, okay, here it is. Yes. How to dance properly, Z Frank. And it's just this animated GIF of him doing all these crazy dance moves like a sheep behind him.
That website looks like it's 400 pixels across. Like,
yes.
It was back in the day when people were still occasionally running 640 by 480 screens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I'm sure I was running something like that. Maybe I was running 800 at that point.
It looks amazing on your MacBook Air.
It's all small. So I think he was the first person that had a personality behind him that was viral. I mean, I remember sending these people and talking to people about it. And then over the years, he's done some really fun projects. He did this sandwich project. He just gave a Google map to people, and they found their location on Google Maps, and then they said, "I'm here, and I'll put a piece of bread down at this time of day."
On the ground?
Yeah, on the ground. And then somebody else was supposed to, and on the other side of the planet, was supposed to find a location that was pretty much on the other side and put a piece of bread down too. And so it was Earth Sandwich. And he did a whole, it's online. His stuff is great. It's like that kind of thing. And he's going to be at the mall, which I don't even believe he's here in town.
What's in the mall?
Okay, Mars, sorry. The Museum of Art History, Santa Cruz Museum of Art History. And Nina Simon is a friend of mine who helps run the mod. I don't know what is her title. You know what we should do? We should call her up. I've got her cell phone. Okay, so I'm going to have Rick. I think she's like executive director of the mall, and she's changed the way the museums work. It's a really public space, the first Friday, the third Friday kind of thing where you can go down there and be there. I'm really excited about what Nina does. So that she has Z Frank makes sense. I think a friend of mine, Nick Lally and Kyle, have works down there too. This is really interact. Okay, you know what? We're going to the mall after the show today, but we got to call her up. Rick, I'm going to... Okay, you go ahead and tell your story. I'm going to send Rick the email, the phone number.
Yeah. Right,
sorry. I thought you said the mall. I was so excited.
Oh, no, not
the mall.
I never am that way. Sorry. Go ahead. Unless you're talking about the Pacific Garden Mall, and that's kind of where the mall is. Go on.
Oh, dear. Okay, I just wanted to cover a quick story about Apophis, the asteroid Apophis. I've got two things about this asteroid. And if, for those of you who don't know, Apophis is an asteroid that everyone was very concerned would potentially hit Earth in like 2020-something, 2024. I don't remember that. It's 2036, sorry.
Right. So this is the one where when it passes us sooner, then we'll know if we really die.
Yes, exactly. So Bruce Willis he's not going to be able to help because, you know, you don't want to explode this thing. It's pretty big. But we have figured out that Apophis is not only unlikely to hit us, but just is pretty much ruled out. Before we were saying like, you know, actually it's probably not going to hit us. It's a 1 in 10,000 chance, but you know, like a 1 in 10,000 chance of world destruction. Like that seems still not so great. But it's pretty much ruled out. But we also just discovered that it's about 20% larger than we thought it was. We thought it was 885 feet, and it's actually 1,066 feet. And in terms of an asteroid, that's pretty darn big. I mean, 1,000 feet, that's 40% of a mile.
So it got closer, so now it looks bigger? Or we figured it out from the math that it's a little bigger?
My math was wrong, by the way. It's not, it's 1/5 of a mile almost. Okay. But yeah, we actually, we just did some more observations and we announced, we were using one of our orbiting infrared observatories to take a look, and it's still pretty far away, so it's difficult to figure out these things, right?
Yeah.
Personally, I think we should be putting a lot more money in detecting these things because, you know, if one
and
of us...
possibly having a plan to do something about one.
We do have some plans. Like, there are some ideas, like a gravitational tether, you know.
But it all involves
that.
Us knowing about it really early.
Exactly. Yeah. If we don't know about it until 5 years out, we can't really do much about it.
I love that science is always correcting itself. I think that's really cool. Like, they had the size, they figured out that, oh, we were wrong, we have a little more information, it's different size. That's cool.
Hey, you know what else is growing?
What?
The kilogram.
What?
So around the holidays...
You know, I love it when you present stuff that's so ridiculous that I don't know what to say about it. It's like, how do you even respond
to that? So here's
how
this works. Okay, around the holidays, they take the kilogram and they define it a little bit smaller so that way when you gain weight, you don't really gain weight, right?
No, that's not how it works.
No, what's actually going on is we have a common standard kilogram, the international
standard. Oh, right, the one that's like
staved
in one of those cool glass bell jar things.
Have you seen a picture of this thing? It's in two glass bubbles. It's like behind this glass bubble, which is surrounded by a larger glass bubble. Now, this is important because we don't want the kilogram to get some dust on it and then get larger.
Yeah.
Because then we don't have...
But it's not like you can use the kilogram. It's like if you pick it up, you get fingerprints that changes the size. I mean, why does it matter what it really weighs? I mean, it's theoretical anyway.
They have weighs. I don't know.
I mean, 1,000 centimeters of water at zero temperature, right?
1,000 cubic centimeters?
1,000 cubic... I can't. Yeah, it's 1,000 grams. No,
it's not a cubic...
It's 1,000 grams. I'm pretty sure it's 1,000 grams. Sorry.
Oh, gosh.
Oh my gosh. Okay, sorry. Finish this up.
I think it's equal to 1 kilogram, I think, is the weight. No, anyway.
So it got
basically,
larger?
Yeah, it got larger. They discovered that, they've always known about this problem of things collecting on the kilogram, right? Because then the kilogram weighs a little bit more. We're talking about dust. We're talking about all kinds of stuff. And, you know, one little speck of dust can actually... do a lot. I mean, we're talking about a very, very specific measurement. This is the international standard.
Yes.
Very precise. And in addition to that, we also have a bunch of kilograms around the world, which they kind of synchronize to this kilogram, and they clean them at different times of the year and things like that. And so they're all off from each other by some unknown amount at any given time.
That, right.
So you look really excited about what you're going to talk about. So I'm going to put the story up on the website.
Okay.
Basically, suffice it to say, they have some new ideas in terms of how they can clean these things. And figuring all that out.
When they sync them up, do they take them to the same location so they can put them on a scale to each other?
You know, I don't actually really know.
Cool.
I mean, they clean them. But they have to clean them in a way that it won't rub off any of the actual kilogram itself.
Yeah, the material.
But they have to get rid of any, like if there's any corrosion, not corrosion, but if there's any stuff of any sort on it, they have to get rid of the stuff without getting rid of the thing itself. So
why don't they put it in a vacuum? Anyway?
You know,
okay,
I don't know.
Can I be a
it's a very
is
good
it
question.
Being a pedant or being a pedant? I can't never remember. But can I be that for you right now? You said very precise.
Yeah.
Please don't ever say that again.
Can
it
I
is
be,
either precise or it's not. It's not very precise.
Can I just say something?
Yes.
You just said pedant or pedant. And
I'm not sure.
And then you proceeded to correct me. Okay.
All right. So enough trolling to each other.
What are you all excited about? You've got
Nina
your,
Simon,
you've had your finger on the thing to bring
Nina
up.
Nina Simon, the executive director of the MA, Museum of Art History in Santa Cruz, is on the phone, I think. Hi, Nina.
Hello?
Hi, Nina.
Hey.
Hi. So, Nina, I thank you. This is Lyle, and you're on air. You're on KOSP live. And so I just got a post that Z Frank is in the house, and I know that you're doing this really cool collaborative, like building and showing people in your larger room upstairs the art-making process as you go. I had no idea you were going to have Z Frank there, and I'm kind of like giddy with anticipation. I've been blabbering a bit about my appreciation of Z and his work.
Awesome.
So what's going on down there?
Yeah, so Z-Frank's exhibition is actually on the first floor of the museum, and it's all related to his current project, The Show, which is a web video series that is massively participatory. So through that show, he's been inviting people to mail in journal entries to be made into a giant life jacket and to mail in or email in photos of their faces to be created with this giant 3D printer into this face light wall. So in the exhibit, we're showing some of the artifacts created by the community of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then this weekend, he has invited his broad online community to just come down to Santa Cruz, and we're having a weekend full of workshops and conversations and games and play, and it's going to be a great example of a virtual community coming together in real life right here in Santa Cruz.
Is Zeef touring this around? Is he doing this in other places?
No, we created this with him. So he, when he started this web show, he knew that he wanted to find a museum to work with, to have a physical substantiation of the online projects. And he asked a friend in New York if that guy knew of any museum that would be interested in participatory work and crazy enough to feel like this was a good idea. And that guy said, I know just the people for you, and send him to us.
Nina, you're awesome. Thank you for making the center hub of Santa Cruz feel so yummy. I love it.
Hey, we're psyched, and I really invite everybody to come down. We're free all day, and there'll be workshops all throughout the day. And then at 5:30 tonight, Zay and one of his collaborators, Stefan Booker, will be giving a talk. It's all free. It's going to be super fun. If you've ever wondered what hundreds of thousands and millions of online fans look like when they show up in person, come down to the mall today.
Fantastic. Hey, will you do me a favor? Is he near you?
What's that?
Is Zay there? Is he around?
Yeah, he is around. Let me find him. We're setting up hundreds of rubber...
You know what? I'll do this. Let me let him do his work. Don't interrupt him. I'll come down and say hi in person, and I'll invite the audience to do so, too. Thank you, Nina.
I'm standing right next to him. Do you want me to put him on?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Hold on. Can I put you on live radio?
The anticipation of radio.
Hello.
Hello, Zay.
Hey.
Thank you for being in Santa Cruz. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah. It's great to be here. I took a big walk this morning.
Are you normally in California?
Yeah, I'm in LA.
Oh, cool. Okay, so what are you doing right now? She said something about ducks?
Something about ducks?
Yeah, she said you were, I thought.
Oh, yeah, we brought up about 1,000 ducks that people are going to be painting today and then giving to each other as presents. Second Christmas, or at least something sort of holiday neutral. Second holiday.
Fantastic. So if I come down there, I can paint a duck?
Oh, yeah, you can paint a duck. We're going to do some finishing stamp stuff today, which is based on the idea of a traditional Japanese hanko, the idea that you create a stamp that symbolizes when you finish something. And the amazing illustrator Stefan Booher is going to be here teaching people how to make monsters and draw. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we're going to be doing today.
All right, so that's down at the mall. This is Zay Frank of popular by internet fame, I should say. I think you're kind of the first person that I realized was like did something cool online, and then everybody knew about it within a week. So anyway, it's been a pleasure seeing your career. I've loved the kind of work you do. I love the sandwich earth, and it's been fun. I look forward to meeting you. Good luck with the show, and we'll see you a little bit later. And I invite everyone to go down to the mall and see Zay and all the work that all the collaborators that he's created to bring together do at the mall. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, rocking. Thanks.
See you later, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so we'll continue on with the geek news, but you guys have to go down there. I know you're both busy, but we got to go down there. Okay, let's go on with we captured the largest structure in the universe. That was cool, Lindsay, and we covered a whole bunch of stuff about the kilogram growing and the asteroid growing. Growth today,
yeah, a lot of growth.
Let's go ahead and let's talk about Facebook, because it's been, I don't know, about 30 seconds since we've done so. So Lindsay,
so Lyle, how much would you pay to message Z on Facebook?
I wouldn't.
Nice.
I would not. You mean like someone you don't really know who's famous to send a message to them on Facebook?
Exactly.
I'm not that kind of person, but, and I wouldn't know how to answer that question, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm on the page with you with that.
Yeah.
But apparently there are a lot of people. Oh, Ben, who would you message? Who would you pay to message?
I'm sure there are people, Lyle.
Jean-Luc Picard. Ben.
So,
no, but, you know, when I'm really interested and I want to talk to someone, I feel like I could have a good conversation with them or something, I invite them on the show. So that's what
you
I
know,
do.
You have leverage.
If I could actually have a conversation with a fictional character,
yes.
If I could have a conversation
Jean-Luc Picard
with Picard.
No, Data, come on. And we're not talking about the actors here, right?
What season Data? Okay.
So people get really into celebrities and they want to message them on Facebook, I'm assuming. So the question is how much they'll pay?
Right. So the title of this particular news story is usually, would you pay $100 to message Mark Zuckerberg? And what they're doing is a
Mark
subset
Zuckerberg, of course, is the CEO of Facebook.
Right. So a subset of users now actually have this enabled on their accounts, where if they attempt to message somebody famous, I don't know what their statistics, how they determine who's famous and who's not based on how many messages they get or how many fans or
something
who's
like
following them,
sure.
What the algorithm is. But they will not be able to message them without paying. And so I think this was, if somebody messages Mark Zuckerberg, it's prompting them to pay $100.
Hmm.
And so they're trying to determine who will pay what before they roll this out and to message whom. So I was thinking, I'm like, so if Biden wants to message Obama on Facebook, would he have to pay? And would Obama have to pay if you message Biden?
Oh, so like there's another level maybe of celebrity, if depending right. on the rate, it's all based on how many followers you have or something.
Right.
Yeah, Facebook started followers a while ago. It used to be that to communicate in general, you had to be friends with both people and you had to, you know, connect. But now you can turn on a feature to be followed, if you will. And I turned it on a while ago, so now when people request to be my friend, if I don't know them, I assume they're a fan of the show or something, just want to know what I'm doing. And most of the stuff I put on Facebook's public, so I just allow it. I mean, they're just subscribed to me. I can't remember the terminology they use.
I think it's subscribed.
So I'd assume the famous people that have like thousands of people following them, like Zay Frank, I'm sure, they don't friend them back, and therefore I guess the messaging isn't enabled until you're a friend. And so I guess that's what it's about. Though I think I might get messages in some sense now. So they're still figuring that out, I'm curious. Is there anybody famous that you'd want to message? The thing for me is that you can pretty much find people's email addresses, whether they see it or read it or care. That's more important. Wouldn't you want to pay to get a response?
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
what I'd want, right?
Exactly. And, you know, it's not usually the celebrities that maintain the pages anyway.
Right.
But I think what their goal was to minimize spam and just people messaging.
Sure, absolutely. You wouldn't want everyone to say how cool Justin Bieber is, because he wouldn't be able to take that kind of celebrity.
Exactly.
Or I should say that kind of spam. All right. Well, since we're talking about Facebook, let's talk about something else, please. Let's talk about something science-based or physics. You probably have a good physics story, right?
Oh, I have a really good bad physics story.
Oh, no.
All right. So I tend to try and avoid covering too much pseudoscience stuff on this show, because I like talking about real science instead of fake science. But this one really annoyed me. There is a company that is making...
Bicycle. Oh, you know what? Can you not tell their name?
I'm not going to say the name of this company. If you really want to find out the name of this company and you have enough resolve to go to the Geekspeak website, you'll find the link.
All right.
But there is this company who is making these bicycle crankshafts.
That's so the pedals of the bike.
The thing that attaches the pedal to the gear that turns, right?
Okay.
And they are claiming that there's... actually gives you basically ultimately what they're claiming at the end of the day is that their design gives you extra energy, gives you free energy or something.
Are they just longer or something?
The idea is, you know, with any lever, the longer the lever is, the more
torque
you can you can push, the more power you can get out of it, right? Kind of.
You know what? Hang on a second. I love stories like this because my scientific mind tries to think of a way for them to be not lying.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I'm going through my mind going, how could you do this?
Well,
the reason I'm not.
What it looks like.
Yeah.
Right. So it's basically like, instead of just a straight line from the point of rotation to the pedal itself, they're actually going out further than the pedal, and then they're angling back, kind of like an elbow that's bent at an acute angle.
Okay.
They're elbowing back, and then the pedal is attached closer in. So what the claim that they're making is that because the crank goes further out, you get more leverage, but then it goes back in, and so you don't get such a huge rotation radius.
Right.
Now, this is just completely BS.
Right, because the distance from the center is the thing that matters.
Exactly.
Wait, unless does this thing have a pivot or does that extra angle that bends back, can you adjust that?
No, it's just a solid piece of metal.
Okay.
And the things that they are claiming.
Oh.
Okay. Smoother pedaling, more power to climb hills, less perceived effort to pedal. That's
ooh, that's probably true.
Placebo.
that's actually the true one.
Faster acceleration, less affected by headwinds, which it's more metal, so it's more surface area. So generally that means more. Also, who cares about their cranks with headwinds? I mean,
yeah.
Not really. And ability to turn higher gearing, which I don't really know what that.
Well, I love that perceived.
That doesn't work.
That perceived part of it. Because if you perceive that your experience is better and easier, then you will perform better. Yeah.
Will you?
Well, that's how placebo works, right? I mean, that's the thing.
I don't think that that's actually true. I don't have any studies in front of me to cite, but I believe I read about a study that showed that if you put on these wristbands or whatever that you think are going to make you run faster, you don't actually end up running faster. If anyone has any actual hard scientific evidence one way or the other, feel free to email us. But
I've seen Dumbo.
Here's the frustrating thing about this to me. I mean, so, you know, people are coming up with pseudoscientific these things all the time.
But the thing is, those things look cool probably, and their marketing scheme's going to work, right? I mean, so from a marketing perspective, it's probably successful.
Yes, but here's what really annoys me. This is why I'm bringing this up now.
Uh-huh.
They're going for crowdfunding. They're trying to raise a bunch of money in startup capital through crowdfunding. So they are trying to get random people on the street, not on the street, but random people to give them a little bit of money to fund their endeavors.
Mm.
That really annoys me. So we have things, I can't remember the name of it.
Kickstarter, thank you.
We have things like Kickstarter, you know, and it's a massively successful business model where people can give some amount of money, and then if the startup hits their target goal, then the money goes to them. And if not, then the money goes back to the person who donated. That's a great idea. I love the idea. But who's going to filter out the crackpot ideas? Who's going to filter out the pseudoscientific ideas?
But who's going to say, you know what,
this actually can go somewhere? It's not so much about that anymore.
Yeah.
It's about the pitch that they make to people who don't want to spend the time to do the extra effort to figure out if it actually is feasible or not. That bothers me.
Frustrated on bad physics, bad science here on GeekSpeak. That's Ben Jaffe. Also, Lindsay Lonnie's here. I'm Lyle Troxell. We are going to be doing a second half of the show, more geek news. Got lots to cover. Some more interesting stuff about Facebook and Netflix, and some interesting things about a possible, well, just in a second, just a crazy app that Lindsay wants to show. But first, let me just mention that coming up on, and this is GeekSpeak on KOSP, and you can learn more about and find out the name of the company that Ben doesn't like after the show at geekspeak.org. Coming up next on the 7th Avenue, I'm sorry, coming up tomorrow, next time on the 7th Avenue Project, tomorrow at noon, are humans still evolving? Are we getting smarter or dumber, stronger or weaker? Are natural forces still shaping our species at all? Or has technology trumped nature and put our destiny in our own hands? KOSP's Robert Pauly and my friend, Robert Pauly, talks to evolutionary biologist Barry Cernivo about the future of humankind. That's the 7th Avenue Project right here on KOSP tomorrow at noon. Lindsay, what's going on with this crazy drinking app that you were talking about?
So there's an app that if you download it onto your phone, and they also have it on their website. I'll give you the information here in a second. But it shows what you would look like if you were a chronic drinker. So it's geared at decreasing drinking among women. And it shows you basically looking older and with some more weight on you.
So, like, if you had been a chronic drinker from now, or what you'll look like in 6 months if you drink heavily?
I think
something of that nature.
Long-term drinking, and it's just meant to dissuade. It's called the drinking mirror.
All right. And you can find out more about that at geekspeak.org. Thank you. And Ben, you got something else?
Oh, my gosh. I do. It's a robotic seal. Yeah, exactly. It's
clapping good.
I just want to read just two sentences from their website. That this is a mental commit robot for psychological enrichment, which is, you know, you can use it for all kinds of things. Perro is modeled after a baby harp seal. Perro is covered with soft artificial fur to make people feel comfortable as if they're touching a real animal. A baby harp seal spends most of its day sleeping. However, Perro has a diurnal rhythm of morning, daytime, and night. So, you know, you've got a robot to live your life with. A little, I'm sorry, not a robot, a harp seal. And it's really, really cute. Here's a little video, and you can go on the website and you can take a look at the video.
Disturbingly cute.
Is this like a health thing? Like it's supposed to improve your health by touching it and petting it? Because they've done those studies that show that animals help people's health.
Yeah, and robots, you know, they don't go to the bathroom, so it's a lot easier to deal with them.
And they have a longer lifespan, maybe.
They might. And when they grow up, they don't eat your children like a seal would.
Oh my gosh. And one last thing, if you want to charge it, you put in a pacifier, which is connected to a power cord.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say it was a USB device. All right. One more thing. Geek bits, of course, what we call them, are these are things you have to see to believe, and you can't really talk about on the radio. So we do. Ha ha. Which means you got to go to geekspeak.org to find out more about them. And we kind of get them up in about 20 minutes or so. But for our podcast listeners, they're on. They're available as soon as you hear us. Isn't that cool? In fact, yeah. Beforehand. So I'll just mention How to Dance Properly by Z. Frank, this great little animated GIF. I think it's actually I think it was done in a point where it would have been hard to do it in JavaScript, so it was probably Adobe Flash, but I'm guessing there. But in any case, that'll be up in geekspeak.org. Oh, and you know what? The other thing I've got to do is just... this is GeekSpeak on KOSP. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence. He's used with permission. In the air room with me is Ben Jaffe. I'm Lyle Troxell. And Lindsay Lonnie here as well. And Lindsay, what's going on with Facebook and laws?
More Facebook.
Yeah, so, always need more Facebook.
Let's make this the last one we do.
You got it. All right. Netflix wanted to integrate with social media sites like Facebook for a while. And I don't know if you remember, I think way back when there was some sort of online app, but I don't know if anyone talks about that anymore. I'd have to look up details. But there was an old law created in 1988, back in the VHS beta days, that has vague language that was designed to protect people who were renting videos from their video rental list being made public or used against them or anything
sure.
like that, privacy thing. So because of the law, it just says video providers. So they didn't know if it applied to Netflix and Amazon and places like that. And the consent that the consumer would give was, quote unquote, written consent. So nobody is going to use a Netflix app for Facebook and give written consent for their video history to be able to be shown, because it's the digital age. Who's going to get a piece of paper and sign it and send it back just so they can use an app on Facebook?
Yeah,
I don't know anyone who would. So Netflix has been trying to get the law changed, but it's a law. It requires a lot of bureaucracy. And there was an initial version that came out that some of the senators said was not complete. They needed to make it more precise for consumers opting in and out. They finally rewrote it, and then Obama signed it this week. And so now you can get, pretty soon you'll be able to get a Netflix app for Facebook, so you can share your preferences, the things you've watched, things like that. But you have the ability to opt in and opt out. So,
but not through the older law of writing to them.
Right.
Which, it totally makes sense. If you're going to Blockbuster, those are like the earlier ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go to Blockbuster, you rent your videos. No, you don't want people to know that you've rented Pretty Women like 700 times, right? So so you want that to be secret. Mm-hmm. And so therefore laws pass so that it is secret unless you tell them, no, it's cool for you to share that with people. And of course, the company's going to want to share that with people, especially in the social era. I can imagine Facebook going, if there was a click button after I watch a movie on Netflix that says share this to your Facebook account and I click it, then Ben's going to know the movies that I like.
Yeah.
Which he already knows, but right. and I don't have to write a letter to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's happening, which means we're going to see this really soon. We're going to get spammed with all the movies people watch on Netflix. this is why
fascinated.
I hate having that many people on Facebook.
Now
I got to figure out if I unfriend someone and I still have that whole public following thing, if they even know. I'm going to unfriend you, Lindsay, so we can figure this out. Not that I think your movies aren't awesome. Oh. I'm sure your movies are awesome. Maybe I'll do you instead,
right,
Ben.
Here.
you guys are both abandoning me for like a month.
I know, it's true.
What? Are we?
Yeah. He has World Traveler in his title.
Abandonment. Oh, that's true. He does have World Traveler in his title.
Yeah, it's all expectations.
Okay.
Speaking of movies,
yeah.
Have you guys seen The Hobbit?
No.
Yeah?
Yeah?
What are you talking about? I've seen it 15 times. If we had Facebook on Netflix, no. Anyway. Oh, you mean the new Hobbit,
The
animated one.
No, the new one.
I have that one on DVD.
It's awesome. We just got it for the girls and they watched it and it was fantastic. And I took Wyatt, my son who's 11, you guys know this, to see The Hobbit, the newer one, right? Which is all like intense and crazy and like violent. And then we watched the earlier animated one with him and the girls. And Wyatt's like, it's going so fast. Everything's moving ahead so quickly. That scene's supposed to be longer. He was really upset about how it was just condensed.
Oh, wow.
But the thing that's so frustrating is that though he's read the book and he's heard the original, the great BBC reading
tapes.
Of it. Yeah, fantastic. The length of the new movie, which I'm hoping you're about to talk about, and I'm totally taking your story, compared to the animated, it's very different. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
You were saying,
it
Ben?
It is a long movie. It is a long movie. I thought it was going to be two hours and something minutes, and it was actually 3 hours and something minutes, so I actually had to leave before the end.
Well, it's okay. It didn't end. There's two more movies.
A what? You know, I've read the book, and recently, actually.
Yeah, we're not spoiling this at all, right?
No, no,
okay,
no.
Okay, we're not going to be spoiling. You can listen safely.
No spoilers. Sure. Never. No way. But I don't know. One of the things that I found very interesting about this movie is they filmed it, what was it, at 48 frames per second or something like that? I think they filmed it 48 frames per second, which is double the 24 frames per second normal frame rate. If you go see the IMAX version, the high frame rate version or whatever, then you see the version that they produced.
You potentially could see the version because your eyes might not be able to really see that. But go on.
Well, okay. Don't get me started on 24 frames per second because that is, I mean, you know, you can tell 24 versus 30.
You said don't get started. Keep going.
It's different. But anyway, one of the things that I found really interesting about watching the downsampled version, I watched just the normal movie theater experience, no 3D, no 48 frames a second, was that some of it looked a little bit weird. It looked like the people who were producing the movie made some of the camera shots with the assumption that it was going to be shown at 48 frames a second.
Absolutely.
So when they downsampled to 24 frames a second, you know, things were a little bit blurry or a little choppy or whatever.
Also, they film it with an intention of it being a 3D movie as well. And so the shots you're thinking about are different, you know?
It's
you
true.
You use depth differently when you don't actually have depth and you have to falsify it.
And there was one very interesting shot where it was like those optical illusions where you look at it and you can't figure out if the triangles are pointing out at you or coming going into the page or whatever. It was kind of like that. I was watching this camera shot and there were these two bridges, and the way the camera was moving and exactly the way the shot was composed, my brain exploded. I couldn't figure out without the 3D glasses.
Does not compute.
Feeling better now.
What's going on? You know, so it was a really interesting experience seeing that. But I do have to say, guess what happened before the Hobbit movie? Star Trek trailer.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
And for any Star Trek fans who have not seen the trailer, go see it. Yeah, it's online.
Add that as a geek bit we do.
Because you may be saying something like, oh no, they didn't just do that. Like, you know, they have a throwback back to Star Trek 2.
Sure.
It's probably misleading, you know.
Okay, so you'll put that on, you'll find the trailer for that. So we can put it on geekspeak.org.
We'll try and find the trailer.
All right. Let's go ahead and, Lindsay.
Awesome.
Lindsay, go ahead and tell us about the NSA helping out banks.
Yeah, so the denial of service attacks that, ironically, or I don't know if it's irony really, I talked about last time I was on the show, was when the original attacks had happened. There's no coincidence there, I promise. The second wave of attacks has been going on for the past 3 weeks, and the last ones were in September. And these are the larger scale ones. They're ongoing for the past year or more.
Can I do the denial of service definition? And Ben, you want to do the denial of service definition?
Yeah, so Lyle's hanging out at his home. He's a web server. And he's, you know, occasionally servicing requests when people ask for things. And then all of a sudden I get a million of my friends or maybe a million zombies to come and ask for a whole bunch of things from Lyle. And Lyle gets inundated and he can't service the legitimate requests.
Yeah, I can handle 300,000 people, not a million people.
Exactly, right, yeah.
Right. So all of a sudden my service isn't available to anybody.
Yeah, it's just basically the server's getting overwhelmed.
Okay, denial of service attack. All right, go on.
So
banks get hit by these.
Right, their websites.
Their websites do.
So that legitimate users can't use the website. Mm. It's, you know, it's annoying to users.
Right.
For a few hours or whatever the service outage is, they can't access their information. The information isn't being compromised or anything like that. It's just they're thinking that it's being done to embarrass the U.S. banking system and potentially the U.S. government. There's theories that it's Iran that's doing this, but there's no proof of that.
There has been examples of shaking people down for money, saying, you know, we'll take your site down if you don't give us money. Then you take it down for half an hour and you go back and they go, you know, give us $10,000 or we're going to take it down for a day. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. And there's a whole industry about that protecting. We've covered over the years a bit on GeekSpeak, but there's a whole market in that space.
Mm-hmm.
Illegal market, black market in that space. Yeah. Go on.
Right. And in these particular cases, I haven't heard of anyone requesting any money or anything like that. It's just being able to say, hey, we can do this.
And if a consumer is really aware of it, if it becomes really public that like Bank of America goes offline for 4 hours, right? If that becomes a public thing, consumers get concerned. Anytime you have a threat to a bank, people are concerned, right?
That
potentially, well, I don't want to use that bank anymore. My data is not safe. Like there's all these fears that can emerge around it. So the banks are very good about keeping it quiet.
Yeah.
So exactly. I don't hear about it. Okay.
And there was a time, because I have an account with Wells Fargo, and I was trying to use the site, and it was down, and I thought, oh, that's odd. Maybe there's something going on at my ISP. And it just happened to be during one of these times. So I don't think most users would even notice that that's what was going on at that particular time. But because of this, the NSA, the banks have requested that the National Security Agency gets involved in trying to help them deal with these things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, banks are private sector, and NSA is the government.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it's something to be concerned about. Obviously, we want this handled, and you can see why the NSA would be concerned if it's designed to sort of embarrass the government or cause panic within the country or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah, and private sector, I think, has the right to ask for federal, you know, government support. I mean, if the banks were being egged every day, mm-hmm. they'd go to the local sheriff and say, hey, stop the kids from doing that. I mean,
that's a good point.
It's similar.
Mm-hmm. And so the only concern would be that this is private data, private user data, and in order to do whatever they need to do to secure this, would they have to have access to that data? Or would
right.
there be a way to prevent them the from line having access to that data? So I'm sure they're going to have to sort that kind of stuff
out. And also, if you're a big bank and you're getting friendly with the government helping you with the security aspect and they kind of step in, then the request of, hey, can we see some of that data becomes a more fluid thing. Like you kind of want a bit of separation, a little bit of buffer there.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if the government handles it in such a way that they basically enhance the potential security and safety and ease of use on the internet in general, even, you know, making sure that GeekSpeak stays up and doesn't get a denial of service attack, mm-hmm. even though we provide no money at all to anybody, have any wealth or worth at all. Is that what I was
including to ourselves?
Yeah, no one's making money. So I could see that it would be a benefit in that sense. But yeah, the line between private data and private business versus government, it gets tricky when the technical details are so complex.
Yeah, it seems like there's always sort of a sliding scale, a tricky thing between security and privacy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Ben, lighten up the mood, please.
All right, so do you guys remember Watson? Watson was the
chess player.
Was that True Blue?
Oh, Deep Blue or
Deep
Big Blue or something.
Blue.
Right, Watson was the Jeopardy winner.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, or player.
Well done, sir.
Yes.
We
should have done that as a question, right? What was the computer Jeopardy winner?
Who is?
The answer is.
What is? Who is Watson?
Thanks, Alex.
Ooh, that's a question. Watson has been used for Jeopardy. And it also is being used for helping hospitals diagnose sick patients based on their records and symptoms.
Describe how it works. From an interface perspective.
So Watson is a supercomputer, but you can talk to it. It understands basic human syntax and speech and that kind of stuff, at least English.
So you can say, hi, Watson.
You can ask it questions.
I'm Lyle. Respond. What's the cool thing that's happening at the museum today?
Precisely.
Right, okay.
So...
Siri, but
I'm excited. We're getting close. We get to go down there.
Like Siri, but a supercomputer. No.
Yeah, it's like Siri.
Packing.
It's like Siri, but you don't get.
Minutes, Lyle.
It's like Siri, but you don't make fun of it.
Siri, why are you so dumb? Stop insulting me. So they tried to integrate Urban Dictionary into Watson.
Lexicon?
Really?
Yes. Now, what is Urban Dictionary? Urban Dictionary is basically the Wikipedia for dictionaries, but with colloquial meanings and things. So, for example, you can look OMG and it'll say, oh my God.
I like that you describe what it is.
Don't go there if you're under 18.
Yeah, I like that you describe what it is by saying it's the Wikipedia of dictionaries. Then you have to say what Wikipedia is, but maybe everyone knows that. But in any case, it's a publicly edited language dictionary,
yes.
Which means it has anything you've ever heard of.
Yes, and also
a lot of things you haven't heard of and you don't want to hear
a lot of things you don't want to hear about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's not necessarily a safer work site, meaning a lot of the definitions are not images, but a lot of the definitions are not lovely.
Like graphic Santorum, profanity. For example. But go on.
Oh, God, yeah. Don't even go there. Anyway,
nice.
So they integrated Urban Dictionary into Watson's...
he got more fun, didn't he?
He got
or
a lot
it.
More.
I should say it. It doesn't have a gender.
Or she, it.
Yeah.
He, she, it.
Zit. No?
Zit.
I think it's just E
wow.
now.
E?
E.
Okay.
Well, anyway, Watson got a lot more fun. Yes. Watson started cursing, throwing chairs.
No, it doesn't have a body yet.
So, yet.
Yet.
Maybe the harp seal.
The harp seal. So I was thinking exactly.
The harp
this
seal
little swearing
a chair.
Seal. You don't even know.
You don't
That's
even
like
know.
This tough little seal.
So yeah, Watson didn't start cursing like crazy, but did use the word BS in an answer to a person who was not provoking. So
I like Watson now.
I just love these stories where you know you have a a robot, you have a computer program, you try to make it human, and then something goes awry.
You know, I was going to have Watson on the show, and now I can't. We do it live. We have to edit ourselves.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
That is true. Yeah, what if it curses?
It's like they should have put that dictionary in as a special use case.
I'm sure they can pull it out, right?
Yeah. So what they did is they pulled Urban Dictionary back out, got rid of it, and you know, oh well. And then they additionally implemented a swear filter just in case.
Oh, really?
They did. Huh. Yeah. So
it's IBM that runs Watson.
IBM. Right? IBM's Watson. Yeah.
You know what? Now that I've said that, I really want to have Watson on the show. That's fantastic. Wouldn't it be fun to interview Watson?
I would love to have a conversation with an angry, cursing Watson, personally. Not on the radio, no. But the thing
about Urban Dictionary is you hear these terms which are very regional and fascinating. And so they become popular kind of because you run into them in Urban Dictionary. And they spread unlike language in this online way. It's very different. Like Santorum, for example, wasn't used. It was an internet-created word, you know? And if you don't know what that term is, don't look it up if you're underage.
Don't look it up.
Actually really quite inappropriate for anybody.
That was...
But it's funny.
Was it Dan Savage?
Yeah, Savage. So the Urban Dictionary, though, has a lot of terms which you've never heard of, but also... You know, when you make up a word or you say some phrase and you tell, that sounds like it probably is a word, sometimes people just take that and then make the word and then put it on Urban Dictionary. So it's not necessarily a reality-based thing. We are running out of time on Geek Speak, as we do sometimes.
Every week?
Yeah, every week, pretty much. Lindsay, Verizon real quick, maybe?
I don't know how quick that one will be, but I'll give you the overview. Six strikes piracy laws are coming out over the next few weeks, and there has been someone seeing how Verizon's going to implement it. Basically, they give you email notification and phone call and light slaps on the wrist, but they're not going to be able to take your service away from you at any point.
These stories and more up at geekspeak.org. I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Lindsay Lonnie and Ben Jaffe. Answering the phone, or actually making a phone call today, was Rick Philman. Thank you all for doing this with me today on Geekspeak.
Yeah, thank you.
That's fun.
It was great. We'll be here next week. Go to geekspeak.org.